Good morning and welcome to the Reloading Rag Chew episode 5. I wanted to thank all of y'all that are subscribing, starting to see more and more people show up. Let me know if there's anything you want to hear about. In fact, today's topic comes from a listener, Carl, who wrote in on Facebook and said that he has been reloading his rifle for a while. He's getting half-inch groups, which is excellent for most any caliber at, I'm assuming, 100 yards. But he was curious as to what head spacing was and how it had to deal with accuracy. And headspace is a topic that comes up in the reloading community quite frequently, but a lot of people don't understand it. And I will say, I went for a lot of years of reloading without even really understanding what it was. And it didn't negatively affect me that much. I really learned a lot about what it was and how it affected it when I started playing around with gunsmithing. But all of a sudden, things became clear, and, you know, you kind of understand why things are the way that they are. So, what is headspace? Headspace, and I guess the simplest definition I can come up with is, it's how the cartridge is held in the chamber before it's fired. So your simplest form of head spacing is the rimmed cartridges. Your 38s, your 357s, your 30-30s, 45 long Colts, your 454s. Most revolver cartridges are this way, at least what we think of as common revolver cartridges. So these have a small rim at the back of the cartridge that exceeds beyond the width of the cartridge, and that rim gets held between the breech face, which is the back of the barrel typically, and the whatever's holding the firing pin, whether it be a bolt, whether it be the back of the frame, whatever it might be. It basically gets sandwiched in there, and the headspace dimension on these is actually the width of that rim. Which is part of why you can start to see on some very finely tuned revolvers that people have issues with certain types of brass because that rim is too thick or too thin that it won't reliably ignite their primers. So in the reloading world, aside from that case that I just gave, there's not a whole lot of else that we do with these. As far as safety goes, they're very safe, and it's part of the reason why on a lot of these calibers, you can reload either, or not reload, but you can shoot either a 38 or a 357 out of the same gun, is because nothing in front of the first, you know, 10,000th of that cartridge has anything to do with sizing the cartridge in the bore correctly, or in the depth correctly. So that's our simplest. We also have belted magnums, which follow a similar thing. They've just got a bigger hunk of brass on the back. I think 300 Win Mag is probably the smallest example I can think of one of those, or the most common. So those are two really common ones. And then we get into pistol cartridges, or what I'll call common pistol, straight wall pistol, 9, 40, 45, 10 millimeter, 50 AE, all sorts of other specialty ones. And those head space between the back of the cartridge, so where it sits against the gun, and the front of the case or the mouth of the case. And I think the big thing here is it's not something where you very often have an issue. There's a pretty good bit of wiggle room built into the chamber dimensions on those. And because they're straight wall, they're not hard to make correctly. So it's very rare to find ammunition that is not that way. Where you can run into it is, for example, I shoot a 460 Roland, which is basically a 45 ACP Magnum. And it uses a case that is like an eighth of an inch longer than a 45. Otherwise, it's identical in every dimension. For that reason, I can actually shoot 45 ACP out of that gun, but I do so knowing it is not headspaced properly, which means that it's probably going to wear on my extractor far more because it's utilizing the extractor to hold the cartridge in place. So those are your common pistol calibers or straight wall. Even straight wall rifle can do that. A common question is, why do I taper crimp on some and why do I roll crimp on others? That's typically your reason. Is any cartridge that head spaces off of the mouth of the case, you're going to taper crimp. If you roll crimp, there's no metal there for it to headspace off of. So now we get into, you know, I'm going to kind of jump into the big question here, which is your average rifles. 223, 308, 30-06, all of those, where it's what's called a rimless cartridge, which means that the back of the cartridge is even all the way back, and it's a tapered cartridge, which means that at some point there is a cone where the brass forms down into a smaller neck. I think I just tried to define a modern rifle cartridge there. Those headspace off of basically the back of the case and what's called the datum line, which is an imaginary line about halfway down that cone on the front. And basically, if you think of it as like if you're tightening a screw in and it's a countersunk screw and you're putting it into a countersunk hole, you want that screw to make contact all the way around with its countersinking, or else the part just moves all around on it. That's what you're trying to do here, only instead of applying a pulling force from the screw thread, you're applying a pushing force from the bolt or whatever mechanism is holding the cartridge in place. So, how does that factor into accuracy? Well, no two chambers on rifles are 100% identical. Some of them, you know, there's a spec out there. SAMI, S-A-A-M-I, creates or works with manufacturers to develop the specifications for these cartridges. They put prints out there, and the rest of the world goes to them when they've got a barrel that they need to make or they've got ammunition that they need to make. Now, there's wiggle room in there. In fact, even two guns chambered with the same reamer will be different because, for one, they may not have been precisely done on the same depth. For two, there's tool wear with that reamer between the two. So, theoretically, every gun has a specific dimension that fits it better than all the others. Factory ammo doesn't have that choice. Factory ammo has to fit pretty much every gun out there. You're losing something right there, and that's one of the common reasons why people say that factory ammo is typically less precise than reloads are. So what does it mean when it's loose? Well, let's go back to that analogy of a countersunk screw. The countersunk screw, if you're tightening it down and you get it, sort of there, not really, you can move that piece around quite a bit. It'll move around, or if the screw's loose, you can move it around. But as soon as you tighten it up, it really locks down. And that's why countersunk screws are used in a lot of industry things, is because that lockdown motion, it not only provides the clamping force, but it also provides I don't want to call it a vibration resistance, but it provides a bit of extra shearing capability of the fact that those two plates now can't slide as easily because one of them has a lot more bearing contact surface, and because it's an angle, it's going to really resist just normal movement. So that's what we're trying to do with these cartridges. Now, if you put something in your chamber that chambers very easily and is a bit small, it's going to be able to move around in that chamber. Now, on the extreme end, if it's really too small, then when you fire, you might have the problem of it doesn't fire because your firing pin is too short for how far forward it is. The other thing is when you do fire, that space has got to get filled. One of the reasons we use brass on cartridge casings is because it expands to fill the bore or the chamber of a firearm, and that way all of the gas gets directed down the barrel rather than getting directed backwards. So, where does that come out if there's too much space? Well, for one, you could do what's called blowing the shoulder out, and this is actually the preferred way of it. Pushes the shoulder out to meet the rest of that. However, if you've got too much, sometimes that doesn't happen. You can also have it escape out the primer flash hole and blow the primer out, either where all of a sudden the primer is starting to protrude beyond the end of the case, which is a really good sign that you've got bad head spacing. Or if it's bad enough, it can even blow the primer out enough that it ruptures and sends hot gases into the action of your gun, which is not good at all. The other thing that can happen is the cartridge can stretch in the middle of the cartridge. If there's not enough up at the neck to stretch, it'll stretch that cartridge in the middle. Imagine grabbing both ends of it and just pulling. Well, that makes it thinner. When you stretch a metal, no new metal gets added, so it gets thinner. So that's where you start to see when people talk about that they had a case head separation or their cartridge is split down the middle of it. Either it's really old, well-fired brass. You know, if you get 20, 30 loadings on a rifle cartridge, I'll consider that normal wear and tear. But if it's happening after two or three firings, you probably got a headspace problem. And that can actually be dangerous if you've got excessive headspace. You run the risk of cartridges blowing apart in the gun. You know, there's a myriad of issues that can be caused by that. So that's our signs. That's our signs if our head spacing is really excessive, or basically the chamber is too big for the round being chambered in it. What happens if it's too small? Basically, it's really hard to chamber a round. If you're talking most automatic type, you know, semi-automatic type rifles, typically the bolt just won't close. That's actually, I think, part of the reason that the forward assist was put on the AR platforms, which is a horrible idea. If you have a problem where a cartridge won't chamber in your AR, slamming your hand down on that forward assist ain't going to fix anything. In fact, it's probably going to make the problem worse. In a bolt action, what you're going to end up with is a really, really stiff action that's hard to close. So you've really got to push forward on that handle as you're pushing down. If you're talking like a break action rifle, often those just won't close. So we kind of have an idea now of what head spacing is. We have an idea of when it's a problem. But how does it make us more accurate? Basically, if we have perfect head spacing, so that casing fits right in the dimensions for our rifle, that neck on that round is going to naturally center your round in the bore, which means your bullet is going to start down the bore as centered and as perfectly close to equal as possible. That's what you want for the most accuracy, and that's where accuracy factors down into this. So how do we get it there? Well, for a lot of years, the answer was neck sizing, which was to only resize the neck down on the cartridge, let the rest of the case stay as it was, because that's now fire-formed perfectly to the chamber. The downside with that is you can't do that forever, because eventually it's going to get really hard. You're going to have basically an interference fit between that cartridge and your chamber. It's going to get really hard to put it in there. So then you've got to full-length resize it, and then all of a sudden you've got a round where you've lost that premium accuracy. So the other option is what's called bumping the shoulder. Typically you do this with a full-length resizing die. And what you're trying to do is, while you may resize the whole body, you're going to try and only push that neck back as far as it needs to be to chamber perfectly in that firearm. So how do we do this? How do we test it? Well, the easiest way to test, I'm going to start with a bolt action rifle because it's the easiest test out there. On a bolt action, you take the fired casing and you put it in the gun, pull the bolt forward. Obviously, you haven't loaded it at this point. Put the bolt forward and feel the resistance that you have to have as you push that bolt forward and down. So our goal is to get that to where that resistance is the first time it just drops in, because that's our perfect load. We're not an interference fit. We're not having to cram it forward. It's perfect right there. So we have to resize our case now. So we use our resizing die. And now the best way to do this that I think anyone's found is what are called competition shell holder dies. As far as I know, Redding is the main manufacturer of these. These are shell holders that have very precise amounts of space between where the cartridge bottoms out on it and where the top of that shell holder is. And you typically buy them in a set of like 0, 0.02, 0.04, 0.06, so 20,000ths, 40,000ths, 60,000ths, 80,000ths. I think they go up to 100,000ths, if I'm remembering rightly. So what that does for you is you basically put the tallest one of those in there, you resize that case, and now we put it back in the gun and we see if the bolt will close. If it's still a little stiff, we take that down, we put the next size down in there, let's say the 0.08. See if it closes. If it closes, that's your one. If it doesn't close smoothly, go down to the next one. And you're going to feel this. Like, you're going to feel when it gets really close. And what you want is just the one right under where you get a little bit of pressure, where it just closes smoothly. That's your cartridge's, or your gun's, perfect headspace measurement right there for a bolt gun. So if you're using those Redding dies, write down what that number is. Now, the Redding shell holders, I said that wrong earlier, aren't cheap. For a set of shell holders, they're kind of expensive. And when you think about it, you're buying a set of like six or seven of something, and you're going to use one of them over and over, unless you have multiple rifles in the same caliber or the same base dimension. So how do you do it without buying those if you're cheap? Which, let's be honest, we're reloaders, we're cheap. A common way that people do it is to back the die out of the gun. I'm not a big fan of that for the reason of most presses don't have a really solid, repeatable endpoint of where the lever stops going down. That's the hang up I've got with that. There are ways to fix this. You can basically build an adjustable stop for your press handle, but it works, but I'll call it kind of the least precise of the options. My preferred way is you can buy shim stock, either brass or steel. You can buy it off Amazon. It's really cheap. I buy 2,000ths shim stock. It's not expensive. You can buy a roll of brass shim stock that will last you a lifetime as a reloader for $15. You can cut it with scissors. And basically, I cut little things that mimic the horseshoe part of your shell holder out in all the same thickness, but I have multiple and they'll stack. And I do it by, I put a stack of shims on there. I do the same test and I basically remove a shim each time. And then once I figured out what it is, I now know that this shim stack is for this rifle. So it's a very inexpensive way to do it. Like I said, cutting the shims, you use a pair of scissors, you just buy brass shim stock. No big deal. So those are kind of the three common ways to do it. Like I said, a lot of people start with, and a lot of manuals prescribe, the backing the die out. I just find that most presses are not consistent enough to rely on that. And for the cost of the shims, I'd rather do it that way. That's our bolt action answer. How do we do this if it's a AR or if it's a AK or any number of other semi-automatic weapons? In those, the best way that I've found is to take, I usually like to take four or five once fired cartridges out of that gun so that I can get a thing. And Hornaday makes a measuring tool for headspace. They call it like the headspace case length gauge, I believe. It attaches to a micrometer. It's got a little red part that bolts into the micrometer. And then it's got a series of bushings that go on the top of that for the different neck diameters, or basically what these are the different datum lines on common cartridges. So you measure between the base of the cartridge and that. So generally on any kind of ARs or any kind of, you know, even up to a Browning bar or anything like that, the rule of thumb is that you want to bump it back 3,000ths, so 0.003. So take a measurement of those five once fired cartridges, resize them, and measure that shoulder again and try and get it back about 0.003. Different guns, you can get to different numbers, but that's kind of the rule of thumb for a combination of accuracy and reliability. So if you don't want to buy the Hornaday gauge, you can do the same thing with a piece of basically precision machine pipe. You could probably use like some very small drawn over mandrel pipe. honestly, for the cost of the Hornaday one, I would just buy it. It's like $20-$30 for the setup. And it's interchangeable with their bullet length gauges, which lets you measure case base to ogive, which we'll get into the importance of that in another episode. But one tool lets you measure multiple things. I would recommend getting your own set of calipers just for that measuring tool. The way that it attaches, and it's a little fiddly. I'd also recommend getting a set of electronic calipers for this, just because you're basically starting with the thing a decent bit open, and trying to remember what your zero was is kind of annoying. iGauging makes some great calipers for like $20 on Amazon. Char's, their house brand, which is like Aventador or something like that, they're like $40. They're even a little bit nicer. But, you know, what I'm getting at here is you can have a dedicated set of calipers to this for not that much extra money. And worst case, you've now got a backup pair of calipers. If your main ones fail, you can take the anvil off and you can use them normally until you get a replacement, whether it's a warranty or a purchase on your originals. So that's how I measure that. Like I said, I can be cheap. I've just bought the Hornaday one. It wasn't worth messing around with trying to make or find all the other sizes that I needed. If you've got something like a bolt gun that you just want to measure, you don't want to go through the bolt dance, the rule of thumb on bolt guns is 1 thou to 1.5 thou, so 0.001 to 0.0015 for that distance. And then an important one, and this gets back into kind of the issue with factory ammo, let's say you've got 5 rifles and 223. You know, you've got yours, you've got your wife's, you've got your kids, you've got your kids' backup, you've got the one that you didn't tell your wife about. You don't want to have to keep track of what ammo goes with what rifle. We all know that that's going to be the more accurate way to do it, but let's be honest. If you're shooting 223 at paper at 100 yards out of 5 different rifles, you probably care more about function and relative accuracy than getting every last tenth of an inch out of the accuracy on that. In that case, what you need to do is take once-fired cartridges from all of your guns, measure all of them, and then resize to 3 thou below the smallest one, because that's going to make sure that it fits in any of those. Same if you've got a bolt gun. You can do that resizing for each of the bolt guns, but you're going to want to end up going with whichever one is the lowest. That way you know that all the ammo that you've got fits in that. The other solution, and this is what most of us do, is that we have ammo cases that are devoted to each gun. So just something to think about for those. You know, I know a lot of people have more than one gun in a caliber, especially if they reload for it. So that's kind of the big thing there, is if you want it to be a universal fit among your guns, which there's a good chance that that's still going to be longer than factory ammo is, for the reason a factory ammo is going to be sized down to the smallest chamber that they found out there that's legitimate. So what do you do if you think your gun has a head spacing problem? There's a lot you can look at. I would just take it to a gunsmith. You're getting into kind of the fiddlier parts of gunsmithing. You know, getting head space set correctly is a lot more difficult in terms of skill than, say, following a YouTube video on how to polish a trigger group. You can definitely do it at home, but if you're listening to this and this is the first time you're hearing about it, I would talk to a gunsmith if you think you've got a headspace problem. And again, the issues that you're going to see there are primers starting to get blown out where they're actually extruding beyond the base of the cartridge. You're getting where it's separating at the neck, or it's separating at the case head prematurely. Or if your accuracy is just horrible, you know, they can do what's called a chamber cast, which is where they pour, it's a molten lead-like metal. It's usually called Cerosafe. It melts at a ridiculously low temperature, like 200 degrees. So you can pour it into a chamber, and it will mimic the dimensions of that chamber perfectly and let you see if there's an issue in there. So that's Headspace in a nutshell. Let me know if that helped. Let me know if it made things more confusing. Let me know how it went. Because this is probably one of the more advanced topics that we're going to get to in kind of my first series. I think next week I'm going to talk about case cleaning, which is probably going to generate a lot of hate mail for me, because that seems to be a very polarizing topic. But in my experience, I have done tumbling. I've done dry tumbling, I've done wet tumbling, and I've done ultrasonic, and I've done not cleaning. Don't tell anybody. So I think I've got a pretty good handle on what the differences are and what the advantages and disadvantages of each one are. Other things going on for me, I finally got some 308 rounds loaded. I've not gotten a chance to shoot them. I've been babysitting my kid every weekend, and the weather in Georgia has been absolutely atrocious. So got a few rounds to try out with that one. Ran into some weird issues where I've got MDT mags for an MDT chassis, and the mag that I had lets me load to a much longer length than the ones that I just picked up. Not sure what's going on there. Need to do a little research. I don't know if that's something where they change the dimensions or if I can file it down or what's going on there. Because it's significant. It's like 0.1, 0.15 difference. It's not that it's just like rubbing the nose. So I need to figure that out. But I've got one mag that I can do, and plus it's a bolt action, so I can always just throw them in the side. The other thing is I-Corps is about to start up next. I think the 14th is the first shoot for in our area. I'm a big wheel gun guy. I love shooting it. Part of it is that it's a great group that I shoot with. Really friendly bunch. Make it a lot of fun. And I kind of wanted to dovetail real quick here, which I know that I'm probably pushing my time limits a little bit, but competition, I think if you are a frequent shooter, if you're a firearms enthusiast, if you are a reloader, you should be competing somewhere at some level. I'm not saying that everyone out there should shoot USPSA. I shot it. I didn't love it. A lot of the personalities kind of rubbed me the wrong way, which is a distinct personality out or distinct issue out there with the shooting sports. But studies that I've seen say that less than 1% of gun owners in America participate in shooting competitions. That is minuscule. I mean, look at the number of people out there that run that also compete in 5Ks every now and then. Or look at the number of people who do CrossFit that have gone to a competition here or there. The percentages of most of those are in the double digits. As a community, the fact that what's out there for us to train to be better, we're doing less than 1% of us, I think is really a problem. And it's twofold. One is, being a competition shooter and shooting in competitions doesn't just make you a better shooter. It makes you better at maintenance. It makes you a better gunsmith. And it makes you a better reloader. The difference is if you make a bad round and you're sitting on the range plinking, you pull the slide back, okay, done. When you're a competition shooter, that bad round might have just cost you that stage. So all of a sudden, you're going to pay a lot closer attention to your reloads. You're going to be a lot more precise. You're going to care a lot deeper about the quality of those. So by shooting competitions, and I'm not saying that every one of us needs to get out there and shoot 3 competitions a month and dry fire 4 nights a week and hit the range and practice twice a week like, you know, a serious shooter was. Not everyone out there needs to hit Grandmaster. In fact, statistically, not everyone can. But everyone out there that is a frequent shooter that enjoys going to the range, enjoys pushing their limits, needs to compete in some way, shape, or form. It will make you a better shooter. And now, I've mentioned before, I don't love getting into politics on this. You all agree with me. But one of the things out there that comes up a lot in political discussions, and the ATF actually has a definition of this, is sporting use. So basically what this is a rifle a purely military-type firearm, or is there sporting use, which I think a lot of the sporting use originally got clarified as hunting. But that's not the only one. In fact, there's a lot of calibers out there that are sporting use calibers that are not hunting calibers. 9mm Luger. There's not much you'd really want to hunt with it. Yeah, you might throw a sidearm on in case, you know, you get attacked by squirrels or something while you're out in the deer stand. But no one goes, or very few people go out hunting deer with a 9mm. So, we've had guns in the past that get reclassified as, okay, well, this isn't a sporting use. Or we're not allowed to import this for sporting use. Well, guess what? If you compete with a gun, it's sporting use. That is a sport that you are participating in with that caliber. So it's a very easy way to say, hey, look, I may not hunt, but I shoot this and it's sporting. Therefore, everything that you've got in your legislation that says for sporting use, I can now keep this gun because I sport with it. Or as a community, there's a sport centered around this. So just something to think about on that. So yeah, I-Corps firing up. I got to get some 45s through the press. I will say loading revolver is like the pickiest pistol loading that you'll do. If the primer is high at all, any of those issues, you have a misfire. When you've only got 6 shots and you got a misfire, it's a bad day. That's coming up. I finally got a ton of my projects around the house are getting done. The machine shop is almost done. It just needs the floor painted, which has let me clean up my reloading room. I can now walk around in here a lot easier. I need to get that 357 AR started loading. I need to get it put together first, but apparently there was a little barrel issue, so I may be sending it back in to get that fixed. I need to get the expander set up for that because I've got some bullets for it now. But yeah, it's an exciting time, and now that it's spring, everything's kicking back up. Competitions, there's more good weekends to shoot, so everybody, happy reloading. Let me know your comments, what your thoughts are. I'm going to try for the first time in this one to put a Facebook post up at least on some of the tools and stuff that I talked about and links on where to get them. Some of those may be Amazon affiliate links. I'm playing around with that. I've never done it before. As I understand, if you click on my link, I get a small proceeds that's going to go help go back to this podcast, mostly probably for audio equipment and for I'm planning on doing some like myth busting kind of things in the future. So it'll help pay for supplies for that. But it should not increase the cost to you at all. If you don't agree with that, take a look at what the item is, copy and paste the name out into another window and buy it separately. I'm not looking to get rich off of this. I just figure if I can help the channel out a little bit, I'll give it a try.